Hello and welcome to this podcast on the Scottish Budget from the Chartered Institute of Taxation. My name is George Crozier. I'm the Institute's Head of External Relations, and with me today I have Chris Young, the Institute's Scottish External Relations Manager, and Joanne Walker, the Institute's Technical Officer who deals with Scottish taxes. Now, welcome Chris, welcome Joanne. First of all, Chris, the Scottish Budget was last week, so what are the key things that we need to know about it?
Thanks, George. So, as you said, the budget took place last week, and this was pitched to the country by the Finance Secretary, Kate Forbes, as a budget of choices, one that's going to help the country to get over the impact of the pandemic. In terms of spending, the big ticket announcements that have been well trailed in the media have been investment in the NHS and in schools to help them catch up with their COVID backlogs. We had the doubling of the Scottish Child Payment, which is a new devolved benefit, from £10 to £20 a week. A minimum wage floor for people working in the public sector set at £10.50 an hour. And the extension of free bus travel to the under 22s. Now, that was a policy that had already been announced earlier in the year, but the budget contained some money to help deliver it sooner rather than later.
Okay, and anything much on tax?
Well, do you know, I'd be tempted to say that generally tax takes a back seat on Scottish Budget Day, but there were actually a few notable announcements this year. So, you know, the big ticket item is income tax, and the government in Scotland has frozen income tax rates, as it said it would in its election manifesto. But it's increased the starter and basic rate bands by inflation, which has been calculated at 3.1%. But it's also freezing the higher and top rate thresholds at their current levels, which is income of £43,662 and £150,000, respectively. Now, on property tax, they've also frozen rates of the land and buildings transaction tax, which I think Joanne is going to talk about a little later on. But the other taxes to look at, there are non-domestic rates, business rates, for example, where there's going to be a below inflation uplift to the poundage rate. The effect of that means that Scotland will have one of the lowest poundage rates in the UK. The Kate Forbes also said that she would extend the 50% rate relief for the retail, hospitality, leisure and aviation sectors by a further 3 months, for the first 3 months of the new tax year. But perhaps the biggest announcement was the one that she didn't mention in a speech. And that was a decision to give councils complete flexibility to set their own rates of council tax. That's quite a big deal, because what that essentially means is the end of a Scottish government policy that has really been in place since they were first elected in 2007. And that's almost certainly going to mean that Scotland's councils are going to raise council tax next year. But remember, next year is also a council election year in Scotland. So that might actually make for some tricky choices in council chambers across Scotland, given that the tax has to be set just a few weeks before the elections take place.
Yeah, so they're pushing the decision across to local government to an extent there.
It has been argued, and I think you'll see from the media that the council groups are not too happy with that decision.
Okay, so Joanne, if I can turn to you for a minute. So Scottish taxpayers, in terms of their take-home pay after tax, are they going to be better off or worse off next year than they are this?
Oh, thanks, George. Well, when comparing the current year to next year, I'll assume a static level of income. If we only look at the changes to Scottish income tax announced by the Cabinet Secretary, so those inflationary increases to the starter and basic rate bands that Chris mentioned, then payers of Scottish income tax will be better off next year. The maximum benefit from those increases in the two bands is only £4.57 for the whole year, however. But as we know, Scottish income tax applies to employment income, self-employment profits, pensions and rental profits. Of those, employment income and self-employment profits are known as earned income, and they're subject to national insurance contributions. National insurance is reserved to the UK government, and the Chancellor has already announced that there'll be an increase of 1.25% in the NIC rates for next year. So as a result of that increase in national insurance, actually, Scottish income taxpayers with earned income will lose out next year overall when you look at both the Scottish income tax and the national insurance contributions together. the increase in the national insurance rate more than offsets the small benefit from the changes to Scottish income tax.
And that's across the income range, whether you're high earner or low earner.
Yeah, that's for everybody.
Okay. Now, I guess one of the big questions is, how does it compare to a taxpayer somewhere else in the UK, England, for example? Are Scottish taxpayers paying more in income tax now than they are in England?
Well, firstly, it's important to remember that all UK earners are affected by those national insurance contributions changes that I've just mentioned. So in terms of national insurance, Scottish taxpayers are no better or worse off than taxpayers in the rest of the UK. But if we just look at income tax, then the UK government has chosen to freeze all rates and bands, whereas the Scottish government has chosen to increase the bands for the starter and basic rates. Now, the result of this is that Scottish taxpayers with income less than £27,850 per annum will pay up to £21.62 less than taxpayers in the rest of the UK. Scottish taxpayers and UK taxpayers, if they have income of exactly £27,000 and £850, they'll pay exactly the same as each other. If income is more than that, if it's more than £27,850, then Scottish taxpayers are going to be paying more than their colleagues in the rest of the UK. The exact amount more will increase as income levels rise because Scottish income tax rates for higher rates and the top rate or additional rate are 1% higher.
Okay, so overall it's slightly more progressive. Rich, high earners paying slightly more, low earners paying slightly less in Scotland compared to England.
Arguably, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now, am I right in thinking that there's a particular anomaly affecting Scots earning above £43,000, £44,000 in relation to national insurance and how it impacts?
Yes, that's correct, George. The exact amount is the higher rate threshold for Scottish income tax of £43,662. On income above that level, Scottish taxpayers pay higher rate tax at the rate of 41%. In comparison, the higher rate threshold for taxpayers in the rest of the UK is going to be £50,270. And on income above that level, taxpayers in the rest of the UK will pay income tax at 40%. However, the upper earnings limit for national insurance contributions is linked to the UK higher rate threshold for income tax. So at the level of £50,270, national insurance then drops down to 3.25%. But up until that point, it's 13.25% for employees. A slightly different rate for the self-employed of 10.25%, dropping to 3.25% below that, above that threshold of 50,270. So on earned income that falls within the band, £43,662 to £50,270, Scottish taxpayers will be paying a joint marginal income tax and national insurance rate of 54.25% in 2022-23. At the same time, taxpayers in the rest of the UK will only be paying a joint marginal rate of 33.25% on that same band of income. Above income levels of £50,270, because the national insurance rate drops to 3.25%, and because UK taxpayers start to pay higher rate tax at 40%, those joint marginal rates move a lot closer together.
Okay, so you've got, so just to recap, you've got this band between the Scottish higher rate threshold of 43,600-ish and the English higher rate threshold of 50,300-ish. And on that, Scottish taxpayers are paying a marginal income tax and index rate of 54.25% because they're paying 41% and they're paying 13.25%. And there isn't a point where English taxpayers are paying the two of those, what, the 40 and the 13.25 together.
No, that's right. So it's about £6,500 worth of income, roughly, that you've got that marginal, that very high marginal rate, and a spike really in that joint marginal rate, because as you say,
I hate to imagine how
that never happens.
Because I hate to imagine how that would look on one of those IFS graphs that they
a bit of an unintended consequence of devolution, yes, I think. Yeah, and something that the Scottish government is a bit more acutely aware of, or has been in recent months.
Definitely. Okay, so that's income tax and national insurance to an extent. What about the other devolved taxes? Anything to see there, Joanne?
Well, as Chris mentioned briefly, for land and buildings transaction tax, so that's the tax that replaced stamp duty land tax on transactions taking place in Scotland, there's a freeze of all bands and rates. So that's the residential property rates, the non-residential property rates, and also for leases, and the additional dwelling supplement, which remains at 4%. There was also confirmation that there'll be a review of the operation of the additional dwelling supplement. And that's something that many stakeholders, including the Chartered Institute of Taxation, have been calling for. In terms of Scottish landfill tax, which is the other main devolved tax, the rates will increase in line with rates in the rest of the UK. And that's really with the aim of preventing waste tourism. So it's very much kept in line with the rest of the UK.
And what about air passenger duty? That's been devolved? Was it being devolved?
There is an act passed for air departure tax, which will be the replacement tax. And at the moment, the Scottish government have just confirmed that they do intend to pursue the introduction of air departure tax. But they're still trying to resolve an issue with the Highlands and Islands exemption. So they can't devolve it at the moment and they can't introduce it at the moment. So as it stands, air passenger duty continues in Scotland. The aggregates levy is also slated to be devolved at some point, and that is likely to be pursued during the course of this parliamentary term. VAT should have VAT assignment should have been fully implemented in April 2021. This hasn't taken place. There's not been full agreement on the methodology, and now there has been agreement that it will be reviewed as part of the wider fiscal framework review that's going to take place in 2022.
Well, thanks, Joanne. That's really helpful. The context for this budget is quite an interesting time in Scottish politics, isn't it, Chris? So we've had a new parliament just start. We had Scottish parliament elections, a new government of sorts as well, and obviously a new parliament. Could you just outline, Chris, where we are on that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, let's remember that the SNP have been in power now since 2007, so that's 14 years. Now, for the majority of that time, they have governed as a minority administration. And they would look for support from opposition parties on an issue-by-issue basis to pass legislation such as the budget. Now, about 10 years ago, they looked to the Scottish Conservatives for support, but over the last 5 years, in the 2016 to 21 Parliament, the party relied heavily on the Greens to get their budgets passed, and that meant that we saw quite a number of last-minute tax changes in order to get the votes that they needed to pass the legislation. But this summer, for the first time since the 2003 to 2007 Labour and Liberal Democrat coalition, there is another party in government, and that is the Scottish Greens. They signed a cooperation agreement with the Scottish government in the summer, and one of the agreements in there is that, among other things, the SNP or the Scottish government is guaranteed support for future Scottish budgets, starting with this one this year. And what we might actually see in the future is some further tax changes as a result of that as well.
I was going to say, presumably they would expect some sort of say in what the tax changes are if they've got to vote them through.
Well, it's an interesting question, George. There are some who would argue that they actually had more power when they were outside of government. I'm thinking of some of the changes that were made to income tax in the first year of proper devolution. For example, where the Scottish Government had proposed increasing the higher rate threshold by inflation, but the Greens refused to support the budget unless it was frozen at a level, which Joanne will correct me, I think it was about £43,000. And then, of course, And then, of course, we've got the last minute decisions around the workplace parking levy and the tourist tax, which, although they're not introduced yet, the Scottish Government was very clear in the weeks, indeed the days leading up to that particular budget, that they had no plans for this legislation. But then, I was coming back from a meeting in Edinburgh, and I was waiting for a train at 1:30 in the afternoon when I turned on my phone and realised that they had done a deal that introduced these two new taxes that nobody had been expecting. That's not great for tax policy making. As to your question, will they want to have sight of the tax changes? Well, let's presume that they have seen the tax proposals that are in this year's budget, and maybe let's leave it to the commentators to work out whether that's a good deal or a bad deal for the Greens.
Thanks, Chris. So on tax, have the partnership or the government set out what they're planning over the course of the Parliament? Have they given us any hints as to what we should expect over the next few years?
I think that we have a broad direction of travel. I think we are possibly going to see some changes around the margins, but the die's pretty much cast about the direction for the next 5 years. Obviously, let's park to the side for a second the existing taxes. Obviously, the SNP would like to see more powers over things like income tax, national insurance, and VAT devolved to Holyrood. And it's expected that they're going to press for those when the fiscal framework is reviewed over the course of next year and beyond. But those are long-term aspirations, and whatever the outcome of those, that will take some time to put in place. So if we take a step back and focus on the powers that are there already, well, the Scottish Government's election manifesto, the SNP's manifesto, has a bit of a small C conservative feel about it. You know, there's no changes to the main devolved tax rates. There are some modest reforms to LBTT proposed, but again, the rates are meant to stay as they are for the next 5 years. I think we might, once the pandemic recedes, start to see some progress again with the plans for the tourist tax and the workplace parking levy. If I'm honest, I think we'll probably see the latter before we see the former, going by recent stories in the press. And of course, with local tax, I think we might see a further attempt at reform. Let's remember, this will be the third time that council tax has been attempted to be reformed since the 2000s. The agreement with the Greens has promised to set up a citizens' assembly, and that's going to talk about the options for reform, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're actually going to see reform in this Parliament. And I think we, as an organisation, would like to see a little bit more clarity on that, particularly given the fact that with the main taxes set to more or less stay where they are for the next 5 years, local tax reform might actually be the only show in town.
And are you willing to speculate on what kind of reforms are most likely if they do go down the road of reform?
I think all I could probably say with certainty at the moment is that they'll have a really good discussion about it and then actually struggle to get on with the job of implementing it, because it has eluded successive governments and successive parties for the best part of 16 years now. And if there was a magic solution... Sorry, George?
No, I was going to say all the parties are in favour of reform, but they just disagree about what kind of reforms are needed. Is that right?
Yeah, to varying degrees, each of the parties, with perhaps the exception of the Scottish Conservatives, would like to see some kind of reform. But I'm not sure I've seen a party that's ready yet to put its head above the parapet and actually call for reform and put the building blocks in place. And let's remember that it's only 2016, that was a really good piece of work done by the Commission on Local Tax Reform. Which I'll declare an interest in, having been involved in small parts of that, that set out a range of options. And you know, we did see some reform, but only very little, and to the existing tax regime rather than the wide reform that's been promised. I mean, like the SNP came to power promising to replace council tax with local income tax, and ran into all sorts of problems. So it's just a really, really thorny issue.
Yeah, so they're a bit worried about what the public might think, particular changes that disadvantage them, I guess. Which brings me on to my next question, which is about Scottish public opinion on tax. CIET has done some work on this, haven't you? Commissioned some polling.
Yes, so we've actually been polling for 3 years now. and the latest of which was in March this year to coincide with the publication of our joint election manifesto with ICAS. So as part of that work and as part of our ongoing work to kind of understand tax and tax devolution in Scotland, we kind of wanted to get an understanding of what the Scottish public knew about Holyrood's tax powers. And the broad answer is not very much. But that's not unique to Scotland. I think there have been surveys carried out. Deloitte did one, for example, a few years ago, which found a general low level of awareness and understanding of how the tax system works. So perhaps we shouldn't be surprised at some of the findings. So we worked with a respected pollster in Scotland, Mark Diffley, to craft a series of questions with the intention of tracking them over time. And this March, I just had a look before we started recording at some of the headline figures. There were about a third of respondents who knew that the Scottish Parliament had actually changed the tax system since 2015. And the big one that always stands out to me is that 84% of Scots who we polled, and this was a representative sample, told us that they need a better understanding of how taxes are made and how tax policy is decided in Scotland. So that last one we've polled in each of the 3 years that we've conducted the survey, and that number's hardly shifted. So, you know, while this is all very high level and a snapshot, you know, they paint a picture of a block of voters that aren't fully aware of the powers that their parliamentarians exercise on their behalf over tax. I think we'd want to see that improve.
Okay, so the Institute wants to see more done to raise public awareness on tax in Scotland then?
I think we would like to see more done to raise public awareness and tax across the UK, but definitely in Scotland, yes. That was one of the focuses of our election manifesto with ICAS. You know, a couple of the ways that we suggested that could be achieved, you know, could be, you know, improving the visibility of the tax policy process and political debate, and also looking towards schools and the education system more generally about how you could integrate knowledge and understanding of tax into the curriculum.
Okay. And talking of the paper that was produced by CIUT and ICAS, there were some recommendations in there on improving the tax policy process as well, weren't there?
Yeah. One of our asks, as I said just there, was for the visibility of tax debates to be improved in the Scottish Parliament. And one of the ways that we think that could be achieved is by the creation of a Scottish finance bill, you know, based on the one in Westminster, not an exact replica, but using the principles to build something that suits the Holyrood process, you know, as a way of improving scrutiny and increasing the opportunities to engage in the process. There's also the idea of a longer term approach to tax policy. Now, I guess one of the byproducts of the SNP Green Agreement is that it's less likely that we're going to see those kind of last minute tax changes that I mentioned earlier. And that maybe gives us some hope that we can start to think about the tax system over the long term. Now, Joanne's been involved in some of that work with the government on the framework for tax. I wonder if, you know, you might be better placed than me to come in and talk about some of that work that's been done.
Yes, I mean, we've been involved in a couple of pieces of work with the Scottish government. Firstly, actually, on the potential for something like a Scottish finance bill or a Scottish taxes bill. There's been a devolved taxes legislation working group that the Scottish government established in partnership with the Scottish Parliament. That was put on hold because of COVID, but there were a lot of discussions there, a lot of useful discussions, various stakeholders, and an interim report published. And we hope that work will be picked up in the new year and taken forward. We're quite hopeful that something positive will come out of it, some kind of legislative process that will provide the opportunity to make legislative changes just needed to maintain the integrity of the tax system. But the other advantage of something like a Scottish finance bill is that it has a guaranteed slot in the parliamentary timetable, and also it becomes more of a fixed event that's is more visible to the public, so it raises public awareness. But also, by having that piece of primary legislation that has to be scrutinised by a specific committee in the parliament, hopefully you're increasing and improving parliamentary oversight of that. But Chris,
yeah, I mean,
continue.
It's I think the visibility issue is really important, and it's also kind of a catch-all for the bits and pieces of tax legislation which you want to work well and which don't on their own necessarily need the kind of legislative timetable, you know, that's afforded to pieces of legislation in the Scottish Parliament at the moment, a kind of line by line, you know, bill to implement a series of different care and maintenance tax changes, I think, would add value to the process. You know, as I said earlier on, this is not about taking what happens at Westminster and replicating it. It's about learning and adapting the processes to improve the overall health and the care and maintenance of the Scottish tax system. But one last point that I might touch upon here, we're focused on the Scottish Parliament and the government, but there's a need for better budget coordination, I think, between the two governments, the UK and the Scottish government. Now, this year has been relatively more settled than the two that have just come before it, where we saw the UK budget postponed first because of the general election and Brexit in 2019, and then when the pandemic hit at the start of 2020. And that's got implications for Scotland because, and you know, this is in the shorthand, we still need to see the detailed UK budget decisions and the impact that it will have on the money that the Scottish Parliament receives from the block grant. In fact, the first time this happened in 2019, we were actually concerned that that might have a knock-on impact on the ability of the Scottish Parliament to set its own income tax rates. Now, thankfully, that was averted, but the result was quite a truncated budget process that limited the opportunity for scrutiny and kind of exposed some of the deficiencies in the current arrangements that, you know, need to be ironed out.
Thanks, Chris. One final question, briefly, if you may. How do the budget measures become law, and when will that happen?
Okay, so the budget bill has been introduced to Parliament. That happened last week. So it now goes through the parliamentary process. So we'll see a debate on the general principles of the bill, I imagine, just after the Christmas recess. The Finance and Public Administration Committee will then do more detailed scrutiny and make any amendments to the budget that are brought forward. And then the bill and any amendments will be debated for the third stage in the main chamber, and it'll become law if it's passed. Now, before that, Parliament has to agree to the rates of Scottish income tax for the year ahead. And it does that through the Scottish Rate Resolution, which is a motion that sets rates and bands of Scottish income tax for the following year. Has to do that because it has to be agreed before the budget can take place. If there's no agreement on tax rates, then there's no budget vote, and that puts us in all sorts of chaos. Now, that takes place immediately before. Last year, it was the debate prior to the budget bill. In previous years, it's taken place the day before. But, you know, I don't think I've seen the full timetable yet, but I expect that the process will probably be concluded at some point in February. And that gives HMRC and others the time to prepare for the start of the new tax year in April.
Thanks, Chris. That's very helpful. Thank you, Joanne, as well. And thank you to you for joining us on this first pilot edition of the CIOT's Tax Policy Podcast. A bit experimental, but I hope it worked, discussing last week's Scottish budget. Thank you and goodbye.